T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago Sports Talk.
I got to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God. My God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you.
Let's go.
I don't know that the White Sox would embarrass themselves by hiring Tony La Russa. I think it would be regarded as one of the most bizarre moves they could possibly make. I think that firing Rick Renteria showed ambition. Hiring La Russa would show that really it is Jerry Reinsdorf's show and nobody else. And he is the owner with all the say, and he hired people that he's not going to listen to. He's going to do what he wants to do. It would turn the White Sox into a one-man show, which they probably have been for a long time, but I think it would be embarrassing professionally for definitely Rick Hahn, perhaps Kenny Williams. I don't know where Kenny would stand on it.
Mike Mulligan.
He's fearless, he's observant, and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner, he's intelligent, he's innovative, he has strong character.
I think that if you're A.J. Hinch, I don't know that you get caught up in that sort of nonsense, and it would be viewed as nonsense. I think if you're A.J. Hinch, you're looking for, number one, to be embraced coming back into the game after a year that had to have been difficult, and understanding that you're going to have some explaining to do. And there's a lot of other baggage, again, that we're distracted by because of this sort of preoccupation with the La Russa episode. If you're A.J. Hinch, I don't know that you care, really, if you're second choice, third choice, fourth choice. I think if you're A.J. Hinch, you're looking for a chance where you can win, where they're going to accept you, and where you're going to get an opportunity to redefine your baseball career. And that would be the way, if I'm him, I would look at it. And I wouldn't care about the other stuff that comes with it.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David, we both know Bob Nightingale, and we both know that he is a serious, legitimate reporter. I'm not saying he's right on everything he does, but if he is not just writing Tony La Russa but kind of doubling down on it, that means he's talking to someone who is telling him in a very forthright fashion that they're interested in Tony La Russa, that the White Sox want to talk to Tony La Russa, and if Tony La Russa is willing to come out of retirement, then the White Sox very interested in hiring Tony La Russa as their new manager. I think that Bob's work stands for itself. I don't think he's making this up. I don't understand why people believe that, oh, you know, that Bob Nightingale, what does he know about anything? If he's writing that with his years and his reputation, there's not a chance he didn't hear that.
I don't know where that notion comes from, that he lacks credibility. He's like a lot of us in the business, Mully. We did it for a lot of years. We both have been on both sides of that equation. Sometimes you get information that doesn't pan out. Sometimes you get information that does. But it's information. And, you know, you have to work your sources. And this is in the USA Today. This is not a hometown newspaper. This is not somebody... You know, if you want to argue this, maybe somebody doing somebody a favor by getting a name out there, I want to see what proof you have to make that sort of assertion, because Bob Nightingale is a credible baseball reporter. He's the national baseball reporter for USA Today. This is coming from somewhere. This isn't being manufactured in his imagination. So when he reports it once, it's interesting. When he reports it twice, it really gets your attention. So that's a legitimate story to address, to cover. We have talked about it. Now, Will they be able to come to some sort of agreement with Tony La Russa? We don't know because we haven't heard from Tony La Russa yet. But we have La Russa in the mix. You've got AJ Hinch in the mix. You've got presumably Alex Cora in the mix. And then yesterday, Bruce Bochy, 3 World Series championships with the Giants, 65 years old, been out of it for 1 year. I think he's also a guy that said he would like to be in the mix as well.
Bruce, I mean, here's my like leading radio guy question. Do you like deep dish Chicago pizza? Do you, Bruce?
You like Luis Roberts?
Just a random question, Bruce. Just a random question.
Yeah. You know, I'm more of the South Beach pizza, you know.
Amici's? Amici's, right?
Yeah.
Would you answer a call from the White Sox if they called?
I mean, I'd listen to anything. I can't say anything, but, you know, they're a good team, but, I haven't talked to anybody, it hasn't been mentioned or anything until you just mentioned it, to be honest.
All right. That is Bruce Bochy. And he is, that was him in San Francisco, KNBR 680. And you can't make it up. The name of the show, The Mac and Murph Show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's where you go, I guess.
That's where you go.
Nice town.
So when you hear that from Bruce Bochy, Mully, obviously he's not campaigning for the job. He was answering a question, and I don't think there's any sort of connection with the White Sox that we're aware of, but he does fit the criteria of somebody who has had success in October. How recent? Well, more recently than Tony La Russa has. I just wonder, do you consider him a viable candidate, or do you just consider him somebody whose name is going to come up because of his success in the postseason?
Well, I hope he's a viable candidate. I really like Bruce Bochy. I mean, he's had an unbelievable career, and he knows how to win. And I think that makes more sense to me if you're talking about retired candidates than Tony La Russa does. But I don't think either guy really fits the criteria that that Rick Hahn kind of laid out. And again, he was very careful in how he talked about what they wanted in the next guy. But I find it fascinating that he says they have a good team. I think this is a plum of a job. I really do. I think that if you're a manager, or if you're an aspiring manager, or if you're somebody that that has any kind of chops in that occupation, this is a great job because of the talent level, because of the feeling that they're a manager away from maybe winning a World Series. And they're not. I think they need more than that. I think that they've got to get their pitching act together, but there's a lot of young candidates, right? There's a lot of guys that you could start the season with that could be significantly better pitchers by the end of the season than they will be going in. And there's a lot of different guys that could really answer the bell there. I'm not sure what some of the personnel decisions are and what they're going to do and how much money they can spend. They're going to have to spend some money. It sounded a lot like they believe Andrew Vaughn's ready to step into that kind of first base DH slash, you know, partnered with MVP Pito. But I don't know that they don't need something else. I know they don't need Edwin Encarnacion. I think that was a failed experiment. I think they need a right fielder. I think they need a couple. They need help in the starting rotation. Proven veteran help in the starting rotation. You know, we talked about Trevor Bauer yesterday. To me, that's pie in the sky. They're never going to spend that kind of money. They're not going to compete to get a guy like that. He'd be a perfect addition to what sure. you have here. And you'd
to,
be
to
even
anybody's
better.
Staff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, Mully, though, everything you said is valid because we understand what the White Sox roster lacks, but we also know what it has. That's what makes it the best job open. That's what makes it, unless, you know, Aaron Boone and the Yankees part ways for whatever reason, you never know with New York, but that makes it the best job in baseball this offseason as we sit here this morning. And that's why you hear Bruce Bochy weighing in on the possibility. That's why you see these guys, you know, AJ Hinch, you know, has been rumored to go to the Tigers. That was before the opening in Chicago existed. You hear about Alex Cora going back to the Red Sox. That would make more sense because of his history there. But this is a job where you look at whoever is the next manager of the White Sox expects to be playing at this time next year. Like Dusty Baker a year ago was, you know, not expecting maybe to be managing the Astros, and there he is in the ALCS. We saw him last night, and so you never know. And this Sox team looks like whoever the manager is, their expectations will be to get deeper in the postseason than they went this year. And it looks like a team that can contend for a World Series with a couple moves to that roster.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. And, David, I think to underscore that, they fired the manager because they know all of that, right? There is a certain ambition that comes into play when you fire a manager that got you to the playoffs for the first time in forever. When you fire a guy that you praised at the end of the season because, boy, did he deserve it. And all the nice, kind things they said about a very nice, kind man. To fire him, the way they went about it, and getting rid of Coop, I thought that was more significant. I said that yesterday because of what Coop represents as a guy that has been so entrenched in the White Sox for so long. Nobody going through that team wouldn't know who Coop is. Nobody going through this town as a media guy wouldn't know who Coop is. It's just he was a fixture. And when you get rid of a fixture like that in 30 years, whatever it was, and then you talk about getting rid of a manager that you liked on a personal level, but apparently you were more ambitious about it. That tells you that they're planning on winning this thing in the next year or two, period, end of story.
And I think that's why you have such a hard time, as I do, accepting this idea that they would pivot and look and even consider Tony La Russa, because when you get rid of a guy like Don Cooper, who's been a part of your organization as long as he was, it's sort of a symbolic step forward, a leap into the future, into this sort of, you're embracing everything about the analytics, about the modern way of managing and the modern way of just structuring your coaching staff. And then you take a step backward by looking to a guy who, you know, you last employed in 1986. So that's what's incompatible about the way that we've seen the sort of news develop this week. And that's what makes it fascinating to follow.
312-644-6767. Let's try Joe. Joe's in Mount Greenwood. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, morning, guys. Now, I'm not going to say that I told you so, but Renteria is gone. And I still like Engel in right field. He's a great fielder, and he actually came around this year hitting the ball. I don't like the Rooster. I think he's seen his best days. You know, here's my pick for manager. My man, Ron Kittle.
Ooh.
Ron Kittle.
Well, I mean, he could make his own bench out of bats and sit on it in the dugout. Right. I mean, I don't.
Broken bats would go to good use.
He's a
baseball guy.
Okay. I don't get that. Thanks for the
Joe,
call.
You're Joe, you're done with experiments. You're done with first-time managers.
Yes.
You're done with trial and error. You can't do that. That's why you fired Rick Renteria. You've got to get somebody who has done the job before. Why? Because that's what Rick Hahn told us. That's what he said he was looking for. Look, I think A.J. Pierzynski would be a very interesting name to consider under normal circumstances. Rick Hahn told us these aren't normal circumstances. They're looking for experience in the postseason, so go out and get it, and those guys don't fit that criteria.
Recent experience in October, I believe. And there are two candidates that fill that, right? And Bruce Bochy would fill it too, to be brutally honest. Tony La Russa, how would he fill that? How would that – and I think that the limited amount of information that Rick Hahn did deliver in that news conference would actually be a complete contradiction to hiring Tony La Russa. So that's one of the problems with that move. There are a lot of problems with that move. The man's been retired for a long time. He's old enough to be president of the United States, for God's sake. But, I don't know. By the way, David, I went and looked it up. You mentioned Artis Gilmore, and I broke up laughing for a long time. Artis Gilmore is 71. He was listed, of course, in his career as 7'2". But I believe he's probably about 6'9 these days.
Right, okay. So he's not a 7-footer. At 71, he's probably dropped a couple inches.
I'm sorry.
You know, that's so funny. Contradiction is the right word. Contradiction is the right word when we talk about this La Russa speculation, because it would be contrary to everything that we heard from Rick Hahn on Monday. So let's hope that there's some explanation for why this has been a story as long as it has been a story. And it's not just us, and it's not something that you can just dismiss. And I know it was labeled opinion texters. I know that Bob Nightingale and USA Today labeled it opinion, but within opinion stories, you can have facts that you report. Okay. That is newspaper 101. Thank you very much. And if he says the Sox are interested in La Russa, I don't think I have reason to doubt that.
All right, we're going to bring in Michael Lombardi next. We will talk to him about kind of pinpoint injuries, if I can use the term. The idea that a James Daniels injury could be one that hurts you in a couple of ways that are kind of subtle and maybe affect what you want to get done. The Bears should be able to run the ball this week, but why can't they run the ball, period? We'll ask Michael about that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Michael Lombardi.
You couldn't get me to buy Mitchell Trubisky if you had him at a discount rack at Seeley's basement.
Radio.com Sports NFL Insider.
It's back to the Matt Nagy offense. I mean, I was calling for Bill and I sitting on the couch. I was calling, we got to put Mitch in the game. He could lead us back in this game. Like, seriously. You know, you're wondering, like, is it all on Mitch? The offense looked like it was back to being Mitch.
Looking at the league from a front office perspective.
They can't move the ball. They can't make plays down the field. I mean, they got no power in their offense. They have no power whatsoever.
Michael Lombardi, every Wednesday with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score. The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to have on the line Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. Insider Calls brought to you by Indeed. Find the high impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high impact. And Michael joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Morning, Michael.
I am doing wonderful. Good morning to all. Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you guys? 4-1, you got to be doing good, right?
Yeah, everybody's feeling good, but there's a report out there now that Dak Prescott heading to free agency after the horrible injury. Boy, that was awful to look at, the compound fracture of his ankle. And had surgery right away, got him out of the hospital right away, very important in terms of avoiding infection. But there's a report that, maybe it's just an opinion, that a couple of teams that would be interested include the Colts and the Bears. And I think people look at defenses and look at quarterbacks and they say, wow, that guy could win there. What would that look like if the Bears had, and I'm going to use the term, MVP Dak?
Well, I think obviously Dak would be a huge upgrade over what they currently hold. I just don't think it's reality. You know, knowing the Jones family and their willingness to spend money, I mean, they don't have an alternative. Even if Andy Dalton comes in and offers them, you know, an opportunity to win the East or compete at a high level for the East, they want Dak on that team. I think Dak is their guy. You could just tell by the reaction. And so they have the franchise tag. They could put it back on. You know, that's not what they would want to do. I mean, Todd France is really in the driver's seat because he knows that Deshaun Watson's deal came in. He knows that Patrick Mahomes' deal came in. He also knows Lamar Jackson sitting out there to get a new deal. So he's going to ask for somewhere above Watson and below Mahomes. And, you know, Jerry's going to have to either pay or franchise.
Michael, coming back from an injury like that, though, how much leverage does a player have typically? I don't know if there's any comparable, you know, examples in the past. And how does a team approach that in good faith? And because it is a, you know, it's a business transaction, you look at it from that perspective, and you just maybe don't know what kind of player he will be coming back unless you trust your doctors to the extent that's not an issue to you.
You know, I think you got to look long-term on this. I think you can't look at, oh, can he be ready for OTA days, or can he be ready for mini camp? Can he be ready for a training camp? If you're going to invest this kind of money, and it's going to cost you over $40 million a year, you're thinking long term. You're thinking, okay, where will he be, you know, in year one, year two, year three? Give me the progression. And to get a quarterback of this quality in the open market is rare. None of them really do. I mean, we saw Kirk Cousins reach the open market once only because of Washington's ineptness in their front office. So, I mean, I think the injury, and I'm no doctor, but the injury to me seems like once he's back, he's healthy, he'll be fine. It may take a little bit of renewing his confidence to feel good about it, but I don't think it's an injury that's going to be debilitating towards his career.
We saw the Bears lose James Daniels, who is their left guard and one of their best offensive linemen. He was having a pretty good year and a promising young player. Also their backup center. And when you see an injury like that, you know, there are weird injuries that happen throughout an NFL season where it ends up damaging more than one player, right? It ends up hurting a team in a very subtle kind of way because it tests your depth, but it also can test your depth at other positions. How do you incorporate an injury like that in an offensive line? Is it an easy thing to do? Is it more difficult?
It's really hard. I mean, look, there's not enough good offensive linemen. Like the Cowboys, for example, they've lost both their offensive tackles. They're starting left tackle Smith, they're starting right tackle Collins, and they're out for the season, and they're trying to overcome a quarterback injury along with two tackles. It's a challenge. There's not enough good offensive linemen, and especially to me in the Bears, which is not their area of strength, their offensive line. It's really one of the things that – and Daniels was one of their better players. So, you know, whether it's going to be Alex Bars comes in, is it going to be Hambright, their seventh-round pick this year, Jason Spriggs, I don't know how they're going to play it, but they're going to have to find somebody to go in there and play at a high level and see what he can do. This is the challenge of the NFL. I mean, last week – 40% of the starters in the NFL are hurt. I mean, if you're betting games in the NFL, you better make sure you have a injury grade for each team going into the game. For example, let's take the Cardinals. They play Dallas next week. Well, you know, that looks like the Cardinals should win that game, right? Because Dallas doesn't have a starting quarterback. Well, the Cardinals lost Chandler Jones for the season. So that changes our whole defense completely. You know, and some of these other teams, I mean, last night you could see it, even though, you know, when Buffalo didn't have Milano in there and they didn't have their two starting corners, that defense didn't look like the same defense they once were.
You know, Michael, last Thursday night, outside of Chicago, I think most of the reaction to the Bears beating the Bucks was on Tom Brady losing track of downs at the end, and certainly what that said about his stage of his career and all those things about Tom Brady. But the Bears made a statement in beating the Bucks and coming back again. What did that victory say to you about this team?
You know, I think, look, you are what your record says, and the Bears have been able to win close games, and they're 4-1. And you can say they should have lost in Detroit. That's probably true. You can say they should have lost in Atlanta. That's probably true. You know, but the reality of it is, you know, you could say the Giants are throwing the ball in the end zone. They could have lost that one. That's probably true. But the reality of it is their defense has made plays when it needs to make plays. And they did in that game. You know, they went 3-and-out. I mean, I think really, if you look at that game and forget the fourth down, put his fingers up, you know, the drive before they kicked the field goal, you know, the Bucks get the ball back there. Good teams finish that. And you got to give the credit to the defense in terms of being able to get 3-and-out and really take 17 seconds off the clock, create great field position. So their defense is carrying them. And you look at the numbers, their defense is playing really well, and it continues to play well. And I don't think you can minimize it. I think you have to really, you know, even though their offense, you know, they're 27th in my offensive rating, but overall as a team, their defense is really carrying them through. Their opponent scoring is fourth in the National Football League. That's really, really good. Their yards per attempt defensively is third. So defense can carry it. The problem is going to be when you go against a really good offensive team that can neutralize your front, and there's a few of them. Obviously, Green Bay is one of them. Then your offense has got to pick up the load.
Michael, when we look at a team like the Bears and how they fit in, they are now underdogs heading to Carolina, which doesn't make a ton of sense given they're coming off their best win of the year and a legitimate beating of Tampa that got everybody in town kind of fired up because we get it. There's problems with the offense, but that defense looked pretty good, and Khalil Mack is showing up like the guy that he's paid to be. does it make sense that they would be an underdog given the fact that their four wins have come against teams with a combined four wins of their own? I mean, it's pretty ugly.
You know, I think Carolina, look, Carolina's become, you know, they start out 0-2, they lose McCaffrey. And your old friend Mike Davis there from Chicago, who the Bears signed, he looks like the reincarnation of Jonathan Stewart. I mean, he's running with power. He's everything that the Bears hope they signed, and he's become that down in Carolina. And Matt Rhule's done a really good job. Teddy Two Gloves Bridgewater has done a really good job. He's protect the football. And these young defensive players for Carolina have really stepped up and played well. Now, Carolina's secondary is not exactly the strength of their team. And I think the reason they're favored here is because I'm not sure they think the Bears can attack that weakness. So, look, Carolina has played really well 3 weeks in a row. They go out to the Chargers. They dominated that game. They beat the Chargers. They come back. You know, they win at home against an Arizona team that was playing pretty well. And then they beat Atlanta in Atlanta. And they did it in a three-dimensional way, offense, defense, and the kicking game. So I'm not surprised they're a slight favorite. I think it'll be a field goal type game. Carolina has really improved this year, and I think that they play smart, and you got to give credit to Matt Rhule.
And what is he doing, Michael? Because he's a guy who didn't have an offseason. He's making the transition from college to the NFL. He's meeting a lot of the guys for the first time when they convene for the first practice. And yet here they are winning three in a row. And I think they're one of the more surprising teams in the NFC.
I think Joe Brady, I mean, Matt Rhule's done an incredible job. He's building a culture. You know, he's really building a culture. The players are buying and they play hard. They play really hard and they like playing football. And when you watch them on tape, you can see a team that's not perfect, but boy, they get a lot of toughness out of Davis running the football. Teddy throws the ball. DJ Moore's a big time player. Robbie Anderson has been huge for them. He's made a ton of plays at wide receiver. And I think when you break them down, you know, they're playing really good complementary football. They're down 7-6 in that game in Atlanta. And the next thing you know, they go into halftime 20-7. They did a really good job of coming back, making sure they control the middle eight. They're playing smart, and I think he's got the players believing in them, and they're more disciplined. And he's talking about a defensive line. You know, Derek Brown, the kid they drafted from Auburn, is going to be a real challenge for the Bears to block inside. He's a good player. And Burns, who was out last week with a concussion, he got it in midway through the second quarter. He's been rushing off the edge with real good power and speed. If he plays, that'll be a problem for the Bears. So Matt's done in there. He's done exactly what he's done at Temple and at Baylor. He started with culture and start rebuilding the offensive and defensive lines.
Michael, thank you. Great catching up with you.
Thanks,
really
guys.
Appreciate the insights.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks, Michael.
That was Radio.com Sports NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Find the high-impact hire your business needs at Indeed.com/high-impact. I got to tell you, we have to talk a little bit about Mike Davis, because there are a couple of things going on in this game that are laughably connected, and we need to get to it. First, we have to get to Kevin Zipak. Kevin will do a scoreboard update, and he'll do it well or else.
Adequately.
No, we're threatening you.
Okay.
Moore, Samuel, Anderson, Roberts come out. Wholesale subs come in. Extra tight ends. Bridgewater has Davis wide open, right flat. Gives it to him. Touchdown, Carolina Panthers.
And how open was that? I mean, nobody from Atlanta followed Mike Davis out into the flat there. And well-designed play once again by Joe Brady.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Our thanks to the Panthers Radio Network for the highlight. Mike Davis, of course, was on the Bears last year, and they signed him to a two-year $6 million contract. And look, you know, the NFL awards 32 compensatory draft picks each year based on your net gains and losses in free agency. So the Bears figured that Mike Davis didn't really have a spot on their team because they had David Montgomery up and running, and Tariq Cohen was healthy. And so they ended up deciding that it would be wiser to cut him to get a fourth-round draft pick, which is how the formula would work. Now, the Bears, they haven't really been able to get any kind of compensatory draft picks. They hadn't gotten one since 2009. Wow. And they ended that by cutting Mike Davis, right? So
yes, they did that.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, they get rid of him, and they end up, because they gave him a $2 million signing bonus, he eats $1 million on this year's cap, believe it or not.
So he made $3 million to gain 25 yards for the Bears, and they cut him last November 9th, which was a Saturday morning before Week 10, because that made them eligible to get the fourth-round compensatory pick, as you point out. Now, that's just not any ordinary fourth-round compensatory pick. The Bears corrected their mistake, obviously, by trying to get that to recoup that in return, and they used that fourth-round compensatory pick to trade the Jaguars to get Nick Foles.
Oh, come on. So, you can't make this up.
You can't make that up. So Nick Foles goes down on the road this weekend to Carolina, and he will be quarterbacking the Bears. Mike Davis will be starting for the Panthers, and he's been rolling lately the last 3 weeks in replacing Christian McCaffrey. He's been a big part of their offense, and Nick Foles probably is not – Mully, I think you'd agree with this. If the Bears don't have that fourth-round pick to dangle and to trade the Jags, I don't know that they make the deal for Nick Foles. I don't know if the Jaguars would be motivated to do it, but Mike Davis's compensatory pick brought Nick Foles in part to Chicago.
And again, I mean, one of the things that really is kind of crazy about the Bears getting Nick Foles is the fact that they traded for him. You know, we got to remember they used that Mike Davis pick in order to bring in Nick Foles. It wasn't enough that they were going to pay him money, and they were going to and who knows what Jacksonville was going to do, but they wanted Nick Foles so much that they gave up a fourth-round pick to ensure that they get him, and it was the fourth-round pick they got as a compensatory selection for Mike Davis. So now that is the backstory heading into Nick Foles against Mike Davis, effectively. Who wins the game and who has the big outing? Will it be the fourth-round pick that they got for Mike Davis? Again, paying $3 million for a fourth-round pick, $1 million for this, off this year's cap. Will he be the guy that wins the game? Or were they right in what they were doing? And do we see an improvement in growth from Nick Foles and his starring role against Carolina here?
Well, let me ask you this. You know, because Davis, over the last three games, he's had 219 yards rushing, 132 receiving, three touchdowns, and certainly has been the focal point of that offense without McCaffrey. Do you look at the way that Joe Brady has used Mike Davis in Carolina and consider it an indictment on the Bears for not finding ways to make more better use of their investment? Or do you understand that they were trying to incorporate a rookie and they didn't have the best offensive line and this and that? And you can find every excuse if you're looking for one. But how do you reconcile the fact that here's a guy that is on his fourth NFL team but is finding his way seemingly with the Panthers in a way that the Bears weren't able to really unlock?
I find it really interesting. I wonder if Tariq Cohen's injury, if Mike Davis, I mean, it's a great question, David, because I don't know that they wanted Mike Davis as much as they wanted David Montgomery. I think drafting a guy, and they looked at David Montgomery and certain qualities he had, and they recognized them from the Kansas City offense. Now, he's not a speed guy, don't get me wrong, so he's not a speed guy, but he is a guy that that you don't necessarily have to be a speed guy as a running back. There are, you know, think about how many actual, you know, 60-yard runs you see in the NFL. It just doesn't happen. What you need is that sort of elusive quality, that the ability to kind of take a hit and turn and keep going. He's got a center of gravity that's fairly low, and he breaks a ton of tackles as a result of that. And I think you see it with what's going on right now in Kansas City with that running back, the rookie that they drafted. I don't know though, David. I mean, they were talking about Kareem Hunt at one point, right? You
sure,
could tell they
yes.
wanted to do that, and I don't know that Mike Davis fits that profile. I don't know that he would have the same kind of success here, even if he were a back. They weren't going to make him a featured guy, right?
Well, That's a thing. They chose not to, Mully. Yeah. But I think that when you look at this offense and you wonder about, okay, in this offense, is the running back a system guy? You know, is he a guy that you can look at some of the traits that he has? And Mike Davis certainly had some traits that appealed to the Bears, or else why would they sign him and give him the money that they gave him? And they basically gave up on him when they drafted David Montgomery. My question, I guess, is related to the idea, and I think this is probably, you know, it's easy to say now. Retrospect, and you know, obviously it's easy to have this this conversation. But if Mike Davis was this kind of running back and was this dynamic in an offense for the Bears, there would have been no reason to have a draft pick in the third round of David on a running back. You could have gone another direction. They chose not to. They chose to get a running back to complement or to be used with Mike Davis. They made David Montgomery more the feature guy. But I just wonder, you know, if Mike Davis could have done what he's doing in Carolina in Chicago. That's the only thing I wonder.
You know, David, I think it goes to a larger point maybe too, which is, are they more in love with their draft picks than with the best player at a position? Are they more in love? Do they, because you drafted a guy, do you give him more of an edge in a competition for a spot over a guy that you signed as a free agent? That also comes into play with this. I'm not saying I know that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Chiefs running back, is faster than David Montgomery. And I know the reason Montgomery fell in the draft is that he did not run the greatest 40 time, and that gave some people hesitation. But the Bears not only drafted him, they traded up to draft him. He was a guy that they had in their minds as the player that fits their offense. And do you get this sort of confirmation bias thing when you're looking at some? Not that he's not a good player. I like David Montgomery, but was he ever going to be in a legitimate kind of position battle with Mike Davis, or was he always going to be the guy that was the starter, just a question of when and how?
Well, I think that we like to say that he was the third round pick that got first round treatment. I think it was just a matter of when, not if, he was going to be your starter. They liked him that much, and you can see glimpses of that, but he hasn't had, in fairness to him, an offensive line to run behind that has created the kind of holes and moved the line of scrimmage in the way that you need. So, Mully, in the context of this conversation about running backs and what veterans can offer and how they fit, what do the Bears do about Le'Veon Bell, who is out there? We talked about it earlier. We talked about it with Bigsby, but you have Lamar Miller, who you're trying to incorporate and see what you have at practice. You've got David Montgomery, who can't find room behind this offensive line for a lot of reasons that aren't really all him. What about Le'Veon Bell? Could you see him fitting in and being an 8 to 10 touch a game type of guy? Is his ego ready for that kind of role at this stage of his career?
No, I don't think he is. I don't think he's ready for that. I think that Le'Veon Bell brings with him a world of issues. And if you feel like that doesn't affect your team, doesn't affect your running back's room, doesn't affect anything other than, you know, the guy spouting off again, I don't think you worry about it, and I think you'd look at it. But I don't know that I feel that way about the Bears. I think they, for the most part, want to avoid that sort of issue. I think they got enough problems trying to get the quarterback to run the special play that you've designed in the red zone. They don't need anybody else running up to you and telling you, hey, put me in, I'll run over six people and get a touchdown.
Are you saying that Le'Veon Bell might not pass the Bears' no turd test? Because remember, Matt Nagy said
yes,
that, right?
Yes, of course. Yes.
So you
That's
have to
exactly
wonder.
Exactly right. Yes.
In the conversation they're having this morning, or maybe they had it last night, or maybe they had it before this was all official, I wonder if that came up, because you do want to preserve whatever value you place on chemistry. And I think football coaches do it more so than a lot of teams, a lot of sports. But I wonder how Le'Veon Bell, if that would get in the way or interfere with the other football argument that could be made to put him on your roster and on your depth chart.
I would be both surprised and impressed if the Bears signed Le'Veon Bell. Even if they just brought him in and then cut him, I would be impressed. I would be surprised. I just don't see that happening. Do you?
I don't see them doing it, because I think it would be bold and aggressive. But I also believe, like you, look – I'm not sure what you have to lose. You have a team that you, if you believe this team is good enough to win the NFC, and at this point in time, you've got to believe that if you're the Bears. You've got to look at this as a, forget about what the next year brings. You can cut them. You have $10 million in cap space. I know the cap's coming down. You have a lot of things you could talk yourself, reasons to talk yourself out of this. But you could also say, you know what? If there's one game, if there's one series, if he can contribute in a meaningful way, let's take a look and see what we have. I would be impressed as well.
All right, you're going to want to listen to our program next. We're going to bring in Ben Reiter. You're going to want to hear from the author of Astro Ball. They've done an amazing six-part documentary podcast following him around called The Edge, and he discusses everything he learned and what he knows about the Astros cheating scandal. We'll ask him forthright if what he has reported, what he's written about, should preclude anybody from hiring an Alex Cora, an AJ Hinch. We will ask those questions next of Ben Reiter. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.